for 2005. Please rise and join me in the flag salute. Begin. I would like to open it to public comment from Commander Martin Basti, followed by CDF Battalion Chief Dan Anderson. Good morning, Commander Basti. Good
morning, Mr. President and board members, staff, and members of the public. Martin Basti, Sheriff's Department. First of all, apologize for missing last month. We like to be here each month, but we had a practice at Diablo Canyon for some responses, and so I was required to be there. And we don't have a sergeant on in the morning to backfill. In the last 2 months, we've had a number of residential burglaries. Three of those were solved, and they were known to the individuals of the property. Those are pretty unusual because we don't have a lot of residential burglaries. In addition, we're investigating several commercial burglaries on Via Concha, Via Alta Mesa, as well as Midstate Bank, and the FBI is assisting with that, and that's unusual also to have a burglary at a bank versus a robbery. So quite a bit of activity during the summer, and also on Sunday we had a confrontation with someone under the influence of methamphetamine and ended up using our beanbag less than lethal rounds to stop the individual, take him into custody. He was armed with a tire iron and had previously assaulted his mother with a knife, so that's unfortunate. However, the use of the less than lethal is certainly an option that we've utilized over the past several years to take people into custody safely without injuring either the deputy or the individual. Lastly, we're getting close to our last holiday of the big holiday of Labor Day, and of course that means school starts. So our resource officers are back with the schools, as well as we'll be in the areas of the school zones, because after the summer, it's important to remind the drivers, and of course you have a number of new parents changing schools, to be present for traffic and for safety for the kids. All school zones are 25 miles an hour, so we'll be present with some marked units to try and make that back to school safe. And lastly, 1st of September, during the budget thing during June, the county did reinstate our rural crimes deputies, so we now have three that have been appointed. Mike Martin will be coming back as a rural crime deputy for our south. We have a deputy also assigned to coast and north, as opposed to two for the county. We now have three. So that's going to be a big advantage for the ranchers in the rural areas, especially with their equipment and as crops start being picked, et cetera, and delivered. So that's going to be a real plus and an augmentation. Other than that, summer's moving along, and of course it's going to be over before we know it. We're just looking for our last holiday, which will be a big beach weekend and a number of folks.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Do you know whether the burglary was south or north of Rome?
It was at the construction of the new houses, and they got into the containers, which have the tools. And again, there is a statewide investigation. There's apparently some folks, because Long Beach arrested three individuals that had two containers at the Port of Long Beach with tools that were taken from all over the state, shipping them to foreign countries as opposed to fencing them. So,
was that part of the Willows?
Yes. And the Via Alta Mesa was the school site. Where they got in and got the tools out of those locked containers. So we're working with several county agencies because this is not only a isolated problem. These are transient folks coming from out of the area with a particular purpose of transporting these things out of country, which is very unusual. But those are expensive tools that are used for construction. There's a market apparently for them.
Okay, any questions of Commander Bastian? Any questions from the public for Sheriff Commander Bastian?
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
And followed by Battalion Chief Dan Anderson.
Morning, members of the, Mr. President, members of the board, members of the public, Dan Anderson, CDF County Fire. During the month of July, we're fairly active here in the local area. Our Station 20 ran 132 calls. Several vegetation fires, again, the majority of them being medical aid or vehicle accidents and such. Most notably, here on the 31st, we had a structure fire on Angelina Court. It was early, late night fire. All the people in the house were asleep at the time. Smoke detectors worked very well, woke them up, allowed for early detection of the fire. The fire was confined to the kitchen area. It was electrical fire in the cabinet area. So they were able actually to stay in the house that night. Fortunately, it's quick detection and awaken them. Probably the most notable thing that we're dealing with right now is we had a firefighter fatality in Riverside. One of our firefighters in our department was killed. This coming Friday, we're going to have the funeral procession. The person was from the Heritage Ranch area, so we're going to be doing the big procession and all that this coming Friday in the Paso area. They've done a funeral ceremony in Riverside yesterday. We're doing one in Ventura where his wife is located. And again, he will be buried in Paso, and his mother and father are from the Heritage Ranch area. That, I'll leave it. And, any questions?
Any questions for Battalion Chief Anderson? Any questions from the public? Okay, seeing none, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to then open it to public comment for any items that are not on today's agenda, but under the purview of the district, and presentations will be limited to approximately 3 minutes. Seeing none, then we will move on to the consent agenda. Warrants, minutes, any comments, corrections? Mr. Wynn, Mr. Eby, Mrs. Worthing, Mr. Trotter. I guess my only comments is that the warrants are becoming sort of unreasonable or unreadable. And that may be due to equipment age or a variety of factors, but it's getting hard to read. Mr. Trotter.
There is one word that I don't understand. It's cruising. That is a word.
Hmm. Yeah. Where are you in?
I'm on page three
of the minutes. Okay. I did have a correction to make on the minutes, page four, under director's comments, the one regarding the draft Water Creek management. It's actually the draft Nipomo Creek watershed plan is out. And it's going to be updated and be again out August 18th, but we won't get into
that. The watershed management plan.
Yeah, the Nipomo Creek watershed management plan. A lot of words, but. Any other discussion on the consent agenda by the board? Seeing none, then I'll open it to public comment for our items on the consent agenda. Our warrants, minutes, fee request resolution, and investment policy. Seeing no public comment, we'll bring it back to the board and need a motion and a second.
I move we adopt the consent agenda as corrected.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Eby, a second by Mrs. Worsing. Madam Secretary, could you call for the vote, please?
Mr. Eby?
Yes.
Mr. Worsing?
Yes.
Mr. Wynn?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes. Moving on to our administrative items. Item number E1 is mandatory solid waste collection slash public hearing, which you're all here for, I hope. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilich. I will give an overview of the staff report here and update on the latest information we have in regards to the protest. The district met on May 11, 2005 and introduced an ordinance to revise district solid waste procedures and rates. The proposed ordinance includes mandatory solid waste collection, and that affects parcels less than 2.5 acres in size. It includes an annual rate adjustment, bundled waste wheeler service, and a one-time $50,000 payment from the Napomo Community Services District to the garbage company in order to keep the cost of going to bundled service to a minimum. I think the first two items are probably most controversial. Those are the mandatory solid waste collection and an option for annual rate adjustment. And so I want to speak just a bit more on those, and actually I'll discuss all these items. The mandatory solid waste collection, again, it's limited to parcels less than 2.5 acres in size. Our estimate at this point is that this affects approximately 5 to 10% of the district customers. So we've got 3,500-some-odd parcels out there, and there'll be they're on the order of 50 of those parcels that are under 2.5 acres in size currently don't receive solid waste service. The goal of mandatory residential solid waste collection is that we know that these properties are generating waste and that the cost of that waste disposal is being incurred by somebody in our community, and what we're attempting to do here is assign the responsibility for waste generation and disposal to the parcel where the waste is being generated. A related aspect of mandatory solid waste collection is that the district is making a commitment to the garbage company to assist in past due fee collection through a lien mechanism. This also is a bit controversial. I think in general, the community and the public don't like to hear that the government is mandating or that the government is going to lien on your property if you don't meet these mandates. I'd like to remind the board and the audience here that the district does use a lien process right now for collecting outstanding water bills or fees due to the district for various services provided. And again, the aspect of a lien is the goal of a lien process is, again, to assign the fees to the responsible property owner. When we have outstanding bills, unpaid bills in a community services district like this, or for the garbage company, those bills then must be passed on to all the other customers at large if we can't collect them from the responsible party. So that's the focus of both mandatory and lien collection is, again, to assign the charges to the responsible parties and not let them become a burden to the overall community. And in fact, incorporating both those items into our solid waste ordinance and our solid waste contract with the garbage company gives us a marked decrease in our overall cost for garbage service. So the cost of the entire community is lowered by an increment by the garbage company since we include these two items. The annual rate adjustment allows for an adjustment of a yearly increase not to exceed 10% a year. The staff wants to point out and make it quite clear that this is not an automatic increase by any measure. It requires a resolution by this board and findings that the increase actually reflects the franchisee's cost an increase of service. So, again, we're relying here on a publicly elected board to review any requests for fee increases and make specific findings that those fee increases are appropriate relative to the cost of doing business. Finally, the bundled waste wheeler service. This item, I think, led to the most confusion in our notice and probably the majority of our protest. And however, I think it actually, and that confusion related to the cost, the actual rate increase that's being proposed today. On the rate notice, it was a bit difficult to understand that, and some interpretations were that folks would be required to not only take garbage service, but to take recycling wheeler service, and that they would be charged for each of those wheelers individually based on the rate schedule that was presented. And in fact, the bundled service, what this does is the residents or the customer's rate will be based on the amount of garbage service they take. So if it's a 32-gallon garbage wheeler that they elect, that's the lowest level of service, their monthly charge currently would be $14.25. Under the proposed rates, $15, approximately 5% rate increase. Now, with a bundled service, then that includes, if the customer so chooses to pay, a wheeler for recycling, a blue wheeler for recycling cans, bottles, papers, etc., and a green wheeler for recycling yard waste. So that's where the term bundled comes together. The price of the solid waste service now includes wheelers for recycling. Under our current system, those wheelers are provided at an additional cost. And so for what this actually means is for customers who are currently opting to take a recycling wheeler, a blue or green or both, they'll see a reduction in their bi-monthly solid waste bill. So I think the other thing, and then I'll let council get to a few comments on this item. So on the bundled service, again, some of our current, some of the customers currently that we have in the district are opting to pay an additional approximately $2 a month or $4 bi-monthly to receive recycling wheelers. We have examples of the wheelers we're speaking of here. And this bundle service will actually reduce their rates. I also want to point out that as we go to the bundle service and recycling wheelers, folks, I think there's a real opportunity for customers to find it easier to recycle, more readily available, especially with the yard clippings, to be able to roll out those yard clippings, which can be quite heavy, get them out to the curb and recycle wheeler. And as their recycling level increases, they might well indeed find that their amount of solid waste disposal has decreased to a level where they can go down to the next level of garbage service and reduce their overall rate. So I think it'll provide an opportunity there also as folks get into the recycling a bit more. I'll bring it up.
Mr. President, members of the audience, my name is John Seitz, and I'm District Legal Counsel. And to the extent that that notice was confusing, it's my responsibility. I drafted the notice, so I want to make sure that that's clear. What's interesting about that notice, just from a maybe just a note, is I drafted used the same notice almost identically to Templeton and Oceano when they went through this process, and there was no comment, no confusion. But I after I re-looked at it, I of course realized I could have done a much better job. I want to talk about just a couple things right here. Solid waste and solid waste activities, when a local agency assumes those, there is the Integrated Waste Management Act, which was adopted by the California legislature, which we need to comply with. And the basics of that act was to reduce inflow into our landfills. In other words, for a large period of time, our landfills were actually expanding exponentially because all waste was being disposed at our landfills, including garbage, green waste, and recyclables were being taken to the landfills, and they had to grow in order to accommodate this. So when the California legislature, I think in 1989, somewhere around that area of time, adopted AB 939, and they came up with source reductions, requirements for each agency that has mandatory solid, that has solid waste to achieve. And that, and that reduction is right about 50%. And so, just to highlight what Mr. LeBrun was saying, from a environmental perspective, what the government is trying to achieve is that this is the smallest waste dealer. If you picture this being gray, this is the one that we would like to see out of the California legislature and Integrated Waste Management would like to see. And they'd like to see huge blue bins, which is recycling, and huge green bins, which is green waste. So if they, in order to achieve a reduction in the sustainable landfill and all the environmental issues that go along with it. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up is because it sort of goes into one of Michael's points was about the potential for rate increase and the 10% figure and why it was inserted into this is because the California government regulates all of this stuff, and these regulations are increasing. I think we all know that there's an issue coming up in the paper anyway about expanding Coal Canyon to accommodate our community and the county as it grows. And those, a lot of those tipping charges are paid, or the cost of those are paid by the franchisee when they take the solid waste out there. And there's also the cost of business that's going up. I think everybody knows about the cost of medical insurance and the cost of health care and just the normal thing. So when we took a look at this, we wanted to come to a point where there'd be enough flexibility to for the district to adjust to the regulatory environment under which we operate solid waste. So there is that 10% in there, but we also wanted to put a caveat in there that just that any rate increase can only be achieved at a public meeting with specific findings related to these issues, you know, new government regulations or things that came about. So I just wanted to make, sort of give you a background, hopefully I did it correctly, with that increase. Additionally, it comes along with us implementing these new regulations is the waste wheelers come with it. So there will be waste wheeler service, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but basically it's to achieve the AB 939 waste reduction requirements. Michael talked about the liens, and he was correct. We do lien. When somebody doesn't pay their water bill, we have a lien procedure, and it happens administratively. We have a number of clients that provide solid waste services, and one of the reasons why we negotiate or do the liens is this actually relates to a reduction in cost to our residents, and that may seem kind of, how does that work? It works because if the franchisee is on the hook for collection, they have to go through a court process and a truncated process of collecting this money. In the meantime, all of our residents are paying the franchisee for the same level of service under the contract. By going to a lien procedure, similar to how we collect our water rates, the cost of the franchisee in providing solid waste go down first. Two is that there's certainty in eventual collection of the solid waste, of the fee. And so actually what happens is the rates to our customers or the charges to the district go down and the rates to our customers go down. And again, just going back to mandatory solid waste, and Michael touched on this, is mandatory solid waste does two things. One is we know that when residents generate waste, it goes someplace. Either goes into a commercial dumpster or pending a neighbor's or whatever. It goes someplace. And sometimes it goes onto the streets or onto our back roads, but it is disposed of someplace. A lot of agencies go to mandatory solid waste to address that issue. The second reason why they consider mandatory solid waste is the AB 939 solid waste reduction requirements. In other words, when we have this wastewater service and it's required, it's used as a general theme. And lastly, and probably not as important, but it's certainly an issue, is when you have mandatory solid waste, because you increase the customer base, when you do that, it achieves a lower rate for everyone based on the contract. That concludes my comments. We are required to go to any time an agency goes to a mandatory solid waste requirement, we give a 45-day notice of this hearing where the agency is going to consider it. The procedures are articulated in the California Constitution, and that is we sent out notices to all the affected property owners. If 50.00.1% of the property owners tender a written protest to the district regarding the mandatory solid waste, then the district cannot implement it. What, though, the protest goes to is not the requirement of mandatory solid waste. This is going to sound weird, but this is how California legislature set this up. What you are protesting is the fees, the cost. Just so you, but the reality is if you protest the cost, you can't adopt mandatory solid waste because the cost is what pays for it. But just to put that in perspective. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Oh, by the way, Tom Martin is here from our franchisee that provides solid waste. And if there are questions regarding the actual service levels and what you can expect, how the waste wheelers will be delivered to your properties, and how this will all come together from a practical perspective, like he's here to answer questions.
Okay, at this time, questions, comments from the board, and this is where
thank you. Have any questions, I'm totally against mandatory trash pickup because it only affects half of our community, and I believe it's a weak argument to say that their trash is going someplace else. I've driven around our community, and our community is pretty much very well kept. The only thing I see is that we have a weed problem. I would like to know how much a difference does Cal Cities pay versus us, and why they, you know, I can maybe be more supportive of mandatory trash pickup if it considered the whole community and if we weren't rural. And to me, mandatory doesn't go hand in hand with rural community. And I have lots of questions. Okay. Now, say we have this is a question for if we did not have mandatory trash, we were at our regular way of life that we still know right this minute. And we didn't have a green waste container, but we live on a mobile home. And we don't have very much, but occasionally we would. So do we call up the office, the sanitation office, and ask for a green waste wheeler for 1 month, or can we put out our own private container and have the district pick it up without going into mandatory? And I also, for $1 for a month, to go from mandatory without having freedom of choice, when it doesn't cover every, to me, 2.5 acres, what did they do with theirs? You know, did they bury it on their land? You know, I mean, this is all kind of just, I just am completely against it. And will Cal Cities have mandatory trash pickup by the state of California? And also, we have a fund that all of this, the franchise fees are collected by the district, gets a certain percentage. And how much is in that fund currently, and what do we do with that fund that helps each one of us? So I have tons of questions, so I don't know where you'd like to begin answering them.
May I make a suggestion? I think the technical questions regarding the mobile homes, I think Tom, I don't know if he can address that or not.
Tom Martin from the garbage company. Under the current scenario that you have right now, if you want to call us up and ask us to deliver a green waste container just for the spring and summer months, you can do that. And the charge, if you said you call the office and it's $1.09, then that's probably what it is. I don't know exactly, but that's probably the general case. That is the cost of the waste wheeler, if you want a waste wheeler. If you want Greenway service, I believe it's $223 for any given month. So if you would like it just for 6 months during the year, you would pay about $12 plus $6 for the waste. So you pay about $18 to get Greenway service for half the year under the current scenario. When you say Cal Cities, I assume you mean the county areas outside the Como Community Service District. At the present time, it is not mandatory in the county. COTRA has indicated that if the MCSD moves towards that, they will consider it in the urban reserve lines, but not in the rural areas.
Now, who administers the garbage pickups in areas outside of the home?
The county of San Luis Obispo.
You negotiate this with the county?
We have a franchise agreement with the county.
Do they go through the same hearing process?
It's not mandatory out in the county area.
Well, the rate increase would be mandatory.
Yes, the rate increase process is exactly the same. We submit the same document simultaneously to all of you. And it's renewed in the same way. In terms of what the rates are, I believe Michael had a comparison chart as to what the rates are out in the county. I hate the quote off the top of my head.
Actually, this comparison chart shows... and this is in the staff report, I just thought I'd bring it up here, and this just reiterates my point that example service levels and the proposed rate increases. And so for 32-gallon residential service, someone who just has the residential service right now with no extras, the proposed rate increase is a 5% rate increase. From $14.25 a month, this is billed bimonthly, to $15 per month. And the example I wanted to really bring out here is that residents who do, under the current structure, recycle, and even as Tom's outlined, if they recycle, if they just take green waste wheelers 3 months a year, they're going to see an overall reduction in cost. And you can see it here that if they're right now using recycling and green waste wheelers, they're paying $16.43 a month, and their rate under the proposed schedule will go down to $15 a month. And that's a 9% decrease, and I do the same thing there at 64 gallons.
Having said that, the rate in the county for 32-gallon service with waste wheelers, in the back of my mind, it's like $14.94 or something along those lines. So, I mean, it's within pocket change of what we're talking about here for Oklahoma.
But we also lose our choice. And I need to know what the administrative cost to do a lien, and when do you do a lien? After $60, you're late, or
no.
And how much does it cost us as ratepayers to do that lien?
The way it's set up in our ordinance, the lien procedure occurs annually, generally during the month of July or August, because we have to get the liens to the the county. But the way it works under our orders, and I can, I guess, read it to you, but the first obligation is for the franchisee to send notice to all of the delinquent accounts regarding collection and the requirement for payment, and to give notice that there is a lien procedure in place. Secondly, if the lien procedure ends up at the district then in turn is required to give special notice again to all of the ratepayers whose accounts are delinquent. They have the ability at a protest hearing to come down and give testimony regarding the liens and why or why not they shouldn't be paid, and then those liens that the board adopts are then placed on the property. So the property owners actually get two notices of default, one from the franchisee. He has to then give us a list with proof of notice, and then we need to go through the notice provisions. And I believe under our ordinance that we get to deduct our administrative costs, because the money actually comes to the district and then is forwarded to the franchisee. We deduct our administrative costs as we receive the money from the defaulting ratepayers, and then the remainder is forwarded on to the franchisee. So, no ordinance is perfect, and I can't draft a perfect ordinance, but this one seems to work for other agencies where it is meant to be cost neutral to the agency. It does provide some certainty of collection to the franchisee, and it does generally equate to a general rate reduction throughout the customer base.
Yep.
The percentage of delinquencies in this district?
In terms of delinquencies here, dollar-wise, it's in the neighborhood of about $9,000 a year that we lose. That people just don't pay. It's not the service and they don't pay.
That's just within this district?
Within NCSD.
The last time we spoke, I thought it was very, very rare. So who is this? Is it the commercial people that aren't paying?
No, it's generally not commercial people, because if commercial people don't pay their bill, we're not going to pick up their container 6 days a week. See, currently, it's not mandatory that I pick it up. So if you don't pay me, then I'm just not going to pick up your can. And a commercial business generally can't get away with that. If you're a grocery store or a hotel or a drugstore, you have to have it taken away. It's residentially where we have problems, that people sign up for service, and then just after 4 or 5 months, they blow us off, and there's no way for us to collect. Then we could pursue them through a normal collection agency process and things like that, but generally surrender about 40% of it to do that. And then also the staff time that we involve in trying to track them down and those kind of things. In the city of San Luis Obispo, it has 11,000 customers, as compared to Napomo, which has about 3,200 customers. 22 people went to tax lien last year. In Cayucas, which is about the same size, maybe a little smaller than Napomo, there were 8 people that went to tax lien last year. It's a relatively minor issue. There's minor staff time involved. It really is just mostly along the lines of it's a 10-minute public hearing and sending out, 10 or 20 letters. And so the expenses of doing that are relatively minor. They don't really account for it.
Any other questions, comments from the board? Question, Mr. Eby.
I noticed in the agenda package that most people haven't seen, there's an attachment of the list of people who did formal protests of this. And the reason for the protest is there seem to be about 3 reasons. One is the rate, one is something called orange bins, and the other one is a mandatory. What does orange bins mean?
Thank you. It's a very good question. Many of our customers, and I think particularly in Black Lake, where they have really limited storage space in their garage, and they have homeowners associations requirements to not have their solid waste containers or recycling containers either on their on their driveway or on the side of the garage. They've got to keep all that in their garage, including their cars in the garage. So for those folks, it gets a bit tight. And I heard from a number of folks who protested that said, you know, the orange bin fits. The smallest blue recycling wheeler won't fit. And so I talked with Mr. Martin about this, actually. And they, of course, one of the reasons they're going to the wheelers is that these are automatic dump containers. So the automated trucks can come by and dump them. And that keeps the stress and strain on their collection employees down, keeps their workers' compensation claims down. What the garbage company has told me that they would do is until the point, they expect to have fully automated collection vehicles by June, and June 2006 that is, and between the adoption, if we're successful, the adoption of this ordinance, and that time, they will request that people move away from the orange bins. Please go to the blue bin, but if you must stay with the orange bin, they'll dump them until the time they're fully automated, at which time they'll no longer collect the orange bin, and folks, their option then would be simply to not recycle if they're just unable. So that's what that refers to, is that the orange bin is what they would desire to stay with. So that's what that equates to on that summary sheet. While we're touching on that summary sheet, if I may, we do have just a couple of updates from it. We received two protests since the time that the preparation of the agenda package. We received two additional written protests, and I have those here by name in front of me so we know that we can account for them properly. And we also, we broke even, though, we also received two retractions of protests. What staff did on this is anybody that was protesting due specifically to rates. So if we received their letter and they were under the assumption that we were trying to propose a 300% rate increase or something along these lines, I drafted a letter and we sent to each of these individuals a letter that clarified what the rate increase is and what is being proposed. And so for a number of those folks, well, about a handful or now seven, actually wrote back and retracted their protests. But that's what the general category of reason for protest, that's what rates is, and then orange bins, and then mandatory, I think, is fairly explainable. So,
any other questions of staff?
Just the letter here,
Mr. Wayne,
which the reason for protest was bin size, is that orange versus blue?
I can't say for certain. Just that last one on bin size, and without pulling up that letter, but it was something in their protest letter was specific to the size of the bins, and I would assume it being orange to blue. The orange bins, I believe, are 18 gallon, and the blue bin, which is the smallest recycling bin. Of course, is the size of that small blue bin there, and that's a 32-gallon container size. And just for size relationship and further discussion on the bins, is the recycling for cans, bottles, and paper, et cetera, the blue bins, they come in all three sizes. So 32-gallon, 64-gallon, and then the 128-gallon. The green, I'm sorry, that's 6-gallon. So then the green recycling containers come in just the two sizes, 32-gallon and 96, the largest. And then, of course, your waste containers come in all three varieties of sizes, and if needed, you can actually get multiple. So.
Mr. Cronin, you have a question?
As I understand it, Tom, the doing away with the orange bins is something you desire because of the automation aspect.
That's correct.
Therefore, I question the advisability of a $50,000 charge to the district, because all this is working to the benefit of the garbage company. I question the $50,000. What's the justification?
Well, let me take it, because actually staff initiated that. The purpose was to reduce the overall cost increase to our customers. We've talked about this a bit, where we have a franchise fee that we're collecting now, and actually we have a fair balance in that fee, and I thought one of the things where we could directly impact all our customers by use of that fee was to make a one-time payment to implement the bundled service, but lower the cost of implementing the bundled service to our community-wide. So that's why the thought of a one-time payment from the district to the...
In one way, you're collecting in the form of a franchise fee, and then you're turning around and giving the $50,000 back to the garbage company.
That's correct.
It seems like an inconsistency.
But now, aren't you really saying that we would pay $50,000 regardless, the difference being that ratepayers would pay it on their additional bills if we didn't buy down the cost?
That's correct.
Yeah. So we're taking part of that franchise fee and we're buying down to reduce the rates for our ratepayers.
That's where I'm going with this.
Yeah, in order to implement the program, we need to go out and buy $250,000 worth of carts to provide carts to the people that do not have them currently. If we do that, then that $250,000 goes into the rate-making process, and it bleeds through the rate, just as reduction in workers' compensation and all that other stuff would go into the rate-making process. However, when Mike suggested at the beginning, what can we do to hold down the rate increase to make it as low as possible, my position is, well, if you want to offset some of that $250,000, then obviously that number goes in at a lower base, and it's a one-time fee. I really don't have a dog in that fight. If you don't want to do it, that's fine, but it does have an impact on ratepayers. So in essence, it just makes the rate lower.
Question for Mr. Martin, please.
Okay.
How does these new barrels and stuff affect Cal Cities, who are not under mandatory? Will they be reflecting a $10 a month increase or something to make up for their loss of $50,000?
No, the county enacted the bundled service, the blue, the green, and the gray, 9 months ago in their service area. If you want service in the county outside of Napomo service district, it is the bundled service that you get, and it is almost exactly the same price as we're proposing here. There is not a lot of difference in price.
Hmm. So, but they're not mandatory.
They are not mandatory.
Hmm.
In the future years, they will bear the cost of not being mandatory, because the losses in the county from bad debt will continue, and they will be forced to look at that in the rate-making process. Areas that go to tax lien, there is no bad debt expense for those areas, so they don't have to deal with that issue.
Mr.
I'd like to remind the board that there's always confusion about what to do with a franchise fee. That comes up very often.
Mm-hmm.
Franchise fee has always been a puzzle to me anyway, why it even exists. I think it was intended for incidental related activities. Isn't that right, Mike?
Right. Maybe I can promo clean up and the clean up.
Address that just a little bit. When we took over solid waste, we actually carved out and made our own franchise area within the district. If you went back in time, you took a look at the solid waste collection 8 years ago, you would have seen one big area operated by the county with one big franchise. Where there was that one area, there's now two areas, in the Pomo franchise area and the general county area. The county, in their franchise agreements with all of their solid waste collectors, had a 10% franchise fee that came along with that contract that went to the county in San Luis Obispo. One of the reasons why local agencies became desirous of trying to take over solid waste is that that franchise fee became a local revenue. In other words, instead of going to San Luis Obispo for stuff, it came to the district to be used locally within the district as opposed to how it was being used countywide. But when we took that, we designated in there that the solid waste franchise fee could only be used for solid waste enterprises. In other words, it can't be placed in a general fund, it can't augment water, it has to be used locally. The district has been collecting that 10% franchise fee over a period of time, and as the board knows, we have given out grants for certain solid waste enterprise functions. Most notably, I think, is the creek cleanups that we have helped sponsor, taking trash out of our creeks, and we have recently purchased garbage cans, I believe, and we're implementing solid waste service there. And I think additionally we are looking at street sweeping as another avenue within the community. But I think when the real issue, and many agencies that I represent do exactly what this agency is doing, instead of continually watching the cost go up as they determine that they have excess franchise fees or are capable of doing it, they actually reinvest it back in their customer base, as we're doing here, in order to achieve a reduction in the total cost of that operation. That's not to say there's not more we can do with it. I'm just pointing out that it's here locally, it's in a restricted account, and it's only going to be used here locally within the district, as opposed to being, as it was in the past, used at the county level.
I thought Cliff's question about the orange bins was why do we have to give up the orange bins, and I thought I heard the answer a few months ago was that the orange bins you have to lift up, or the worker has to lift up and empty them into the truck, which leads to back injuries, and eventually workers' compensation was going to require that they go away from lifting up those to the automatic things that the truck actually lifts up. So I thought that was the answer as to why they had to get rid of the orange bin. It's something that's going to be imposed by the state anyway, so we might as well bite the bullet now. I thought that was what I had heard the original.
It was more along the lines of the garbage company is going to insist that we go to waste wheelers instead of orange bins, just because they drive workers' compensation costs and lifting them up. It takes about 9 months to get a truck, so if I order a truck November or December, if we get lucky, it'll be here by July. And so the truck that currently picks up orange bins in those areas that use them will be the same truck that's running down the street right now. So they'll be able to handle them for a while. But 9 months from now or 8 months from now, you know, we want you to be in 32-gallon blue waste instead of orange bins, because it is a compensation issue.
Mrs. Worsley?
Okay, my last comment is that we can still remove the orange bins, and we can still receive the franchise district. The district can still receive the franchise money, funds, without mandatory. And it still allows the people of Napomo, that was just a divided community, to be the same, and we still have choice. This doesn't make any sense to me. If we were one large community, such as Oceano, where there's a lot of tourism and there's a lot of rentals and things like that, I can see the mandatory. But we Napomo's rural. And when you start doing mandatory, we lose rural. Eventually, we won't have any rural. We'll be big city.
Okay, at this time, I want to open it to the public for comment. Again, when you come to the podium, please state your name and whether you're an NCSD customer or not. And comments will be limited to 3 minutes because we have a fair amount of people out there. If you agree with what somebody said just prior to you, say, I agree with that person, and that'll help to speed things up. So, Mr. Sykes?
Just before we start, We have a list here, of course, of people that have already, that have sent letters of support and sent letters of protest. What is key to us, from the lawyer perspective at this meeting, is that you state your name and your residence if you're going to protest. You know, if, and I think, although, so we can take a look at them, you know, keep a score, sort of remember this, that it takes a majority of the property owners to protest. I talked about that, that 50.1119% going to mandatory solid waste. And I just want Michael to, if he has the opportunity, to say what is that magic figure of 50.1111% and how many protests we have on the books right now.
Well, if I may summarize, and this is in the staff report, and I'll give the updated version, we sent 4,200 notices, 4,211 actually. We've received 57 protests to date, and that number stands. As I outlined, we, since the preparation of this package, we've received two additional protests, but we've also received two retractions. And so...
what's that number between those two?
I'm sorry?
What's the net number for each one of those? What with the retractions and so forth?
Net number of retractions then is 6, and the net number of protests is 57.
I just want to make sure everybody sort of understands this. Staff has taken a very liberal view of what the protests are. As I kind of said before, you know, what you're protesting is the fee, the charge, and... but we have taken, in calculating that 57 number, we have included protests that say mandatory solid waste, we protest the orange wheeler or the orange bin. So it's a cumulative total of all the protests, and staff has not, as far as I know, has not differentiated between the protest of the actual fees in arriving at these numbers.
So basically you're saying that by law, for the protest to be successful, you'd have to have approximately 2,100 protests.
Exactly. I have a question on number 40.
Yeah, I would like to open
it. Oh, okay. Well, we were discussing the list, so I see one person has
I
three.
I do want to open this now to public comment, please. Your name and...
Hi. Jean Taylor, I'm at 223 Lima, and basically I have 2 points. Number one, the orange bin. The gentleman that does that, especially in our neighborhood, is amazing. He does it by himself, and he goes through there like a streak of lightning almost. However, the damage to the orange bins themselves has got to be astronomical in the way that he has to throw them due to his time frame. And our neighborhood also has been kind enough in that we put like two together and two across from each other. The neighbors are trying to work with your gentleman that is, you know, so efficient. My second comment refers to, you said how many letters went out, blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry, not everybody got one. That is a major concern of mine, in that I know I, for a fact, am not the only one that did not get one.
Okay. Just for the record, just so that we have, because I didn't hear the words that staff wants to hear one way or the other, so if we don't hear it, we mark you down one way. Are you protesting mandatory solid waste or just commenting and not...
Mine was more just a comment at this point, because I don't really know enough about it, in that I did not get the letter.
Right. Just to make something clear here, our obligation under the law, and Prop 218 as enacted, Michael just reminded me, our obligation is to send these notices to the property owners. Okay, so then we did. I just want to make sure that everybody...
No, I am a property owner, I did not
yet. Okay. Please.
I'm Molly Abbott, Jokey, at 226 Summit Station Road, and I adamantly oppose mandatory pickup. We take out, Mr. Wynn had a letter in the press, Adobe Press, a while back saying everyone who does not have trash pickup uses their neighbors or they throw it along the road. Not everyone. We never, never, never dump one piece of trash other than at the city dump. And I also heard implications over here that waste generated, somebody must pay. Well, we pay because we take our city trash to the city dump. And thank you, Judith Wilson, for looking out for the community. And it's not only the rate pay, the pay, but it's also choice. We're out of town 3 and 4 months of the year. We must pay in CSB the rate whether we're in town or not. If we want trash pickup and it's pouring down rain, off we go in the rain to set the trash out. When why not make it convenient for us? And we also do a lot of recycling. Let's see what else I have to say. I'll let Larry talk.
Thank you very much.
David Kaufman, 228 Crosby Way, Black Lake Mobile Estates. I think the proposed rate increase for the residences is very modest. I don't see how you can get by with it. With that little increase, given the price of gasoline, I think it figures out about, what, $1.50 more for every residence. So I'm in favor of that kind of an increase. I do think there should be some choice given to people who, like the former speaker, take care of their own trash and does it efficiently and with a good view of being a good citizen. I have a question about the size of containers. It says in the letter that we'd have a 64-gallon waste wheeler for recycling and a 96-gallon waste wheeler for green waste. Would there be any option for us to have smaller containers? Because we're retired, we have a small home and lot. We don't need those great big things. Thank you.
I think Mr. Martin may be able to answer that very quickly.
All right. Yeah, I
just look over there. Those are the options for the sizes you can have.
Tom? And could you also, we marked this down as a protest, but the prior commenter talked about being out of town for a number of days and stuff. Can you just tell us how the garbage, how the franchisee addresses that?
Yes, what we have is what we call a vacation rate, but if you're gone from July 1st to August 31st, you just call us up and let us know. And it's a reduced rate that only deals with the fixed cost of garbage collection, which is 82%. And you just let us know that you're going to be gone for that amount of time, and we'll reduce you to that rate, which, given that, is about $10 a month for the time frame that you're gone. And then when you come back, you either call us or the machine will automatically kick it in if you give us your thing.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Larry Zilke, 226 Summit Station Road. You know, I have to second what my wife said about being accused of throwing trash all over town. When lawyers in public and people in the paper accuse us of throwing trash around, I take exception. Every time I pay $17.50 to the dump down there to take away a pickup load of my trash, I feel like I've paid for getting rid of my trash. Having said that, I think this whole discussion is legitimate. Just as a little bit of background, we live on 2 acres. I don't know how many of you have passed by our place on Summit Station Road. It's the White House with a red tree. I think it's easy to tell that we do a lot of work there. We have a lot of flowers. We have a lot of landscaping. We have an orchard. We have vineyards. And if you can imagine getting by those trash bins with the amount of trash we generate, you got it. Well, on the average, normally, we take a big pickup load of stuff to the dump once a month and sometimes two or three times. It's ridiculous for us to have to pay this lousy $15 a month, considering what we do otherwise to get rid of our trash. And that's after we do recycle our green waste, and we make a lot of effort to keep our trash down. But just for people like us, this whole thing is ridiculous. I don't know if the proper division is 1 acre or 1.5 or 2. I guess it depends on your situation. And it seems to me there should be something in this system where you could waiver, but give us a waiver for our particular situation. This is it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zolke.
My name is John Pintle at 450 Nopal since 1982. And I agree with what a lot of the speakers have said. And as I approach retirement, I intend to do a lot of traveling once I retire and be gone for extended periods, at which time I'll be paying for a service I don't use. This is not a fee, it's a tax. A tax should be voted on at the polls, not satisfied by a legal requirement to mail out cards, but a moral obligation to let us vote on it in the POMO. Do we want mandatory? Do we not want mandatory? And there's no remedy for bad service. I originally, when I first moved in here, had a crash service. I got rid of it because they would leave papers in the street and I would have to go out and clean up after them. And this automated service invites that even more. I have one at the place of work where my job is to clean up after the dumpster, one of my jobs is to clean up after the dumpster leaves. Because as they fly out the yard, stuff flies out of their dumpster. Or they don't get it all from the dumpster, and it lays on the ground. And the driver does not get out, does not pick it up. If it's mandatory, what remedy would we have for bad service? He will get his money month after month after month, unless 51 point whatever percent protest. And this is a tax, and I'm not usually a single issue person, but anyone on this panel that votes for mandatory, I will work against your re-election, and I will work tirelessly. I promise you that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Cornett.
Good morning. My name is Jim Cornett. I live at 516 Charo Way in the Pomo. I'm not sure how you're going to divide my vote on this. I'm in favor of the rate increase and in the bundling of the containers. I like all the reasons for it, but I'm not in favor of mandatory. I think it does take something away from our choice. I agree with many people here that it does come off as looking like a pseudo tax. And the thing that I want to make sure I understand that I've heard different numbers. How many people are going to be forced into this service that don't have it now? Is it 50? Is it 150? I'm really unclear how many people are getting that this really details. Now, I take trash service, and I have thought about going back to the way I used to do it back in my previous residence, which is doing my own aggressive recycling and taking my trash to a transfer site. But it's the green waste and all that stuff my wife generates that's keeping me from doing that. I really am not in favor of mandatory, and I'm most concerned about mandatory because of the people who will be gone for months at a time. Yes, there are people going to... We had somebody recently that's had a summer home. There's a person in our neighborhood who has built their house, and their water's on, their electricity's on, but the lady hasn't been able to move into the house for almost a year because she's stuck up north trying to sell her old house and get out of her job. She's going to have to pay for trash service? That doesn't seem right. And with all due respect to your comments, if I don't take trash service, the bill should be zero if I'm gone for 3 months or 6 months. Not 10 out of $15. I recently went on vacation for 6 weeks. I suspended the service for those 6 weeks. I took my wife out to dinner with the money. So we just shouldn't do this on a mandatory basis, and that's my way.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cornett.
My name is Howard Vanderwall, and we live at 855 10 Oaks Williams here in the Pomo. And we're just two people. Now, how much trash or garbage does two people in a household generate in a month? And on our block, there's three widows on there, and how much do they generate? And we're opposed to this mandatory trash pickup because I recycle it, I green waste it, and compost, and I got a chipper. And I just grind it all up, and I just stick it back in the ground. So we're really opposed to green waste. And I agree with the Judy there. We don't need it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Randall.
Good morning.
Mr. Cornett.
Laura Cornett at 516 Charles. I don't recall the dinner that I got with the savings from the trash rate, but I agree with what everyone said, and so many of my concerns have been questioned, but I do appreciate the chance just to state opposition or question some of the things that were said. If you increase the customer base, then you're going to be able to reduce our fee. That's fine, but you don't have to do it by mandatory. With the growth that's going on in the promo, there's new homes being added all the time, and 98% of the people elect to have trash pickup. So are we going to get a reduction in rates as we grow? I don't think so, but that's one of the logics that you use. As far as the liens, you mentioned that, well, we put liens on people who don't pay their water bills. But these are people that use water. The people that go away and don't use water have a very low bill, and generally they want water to the extent that they are going to pay their bill, and if not, yes, put a lien on their home. But trash pickup is an altogether different thing than water or electricity. It was mentioned that the California AB 939 was primarily to reduce the landfill. I don't understand how the mandatory reduces the landfill, because with the recycling, many people don't use trash service and do recycle to the point where they save the landfill. So I wasn't sure how that. The other thing is about the fees. You're reducing the fees for people that have elected to have trash service. You're reducing your fee by 75%. Why? It's not helping the person that doesn't use the trash service whose fee you're raising. They have less trash. They should pay a lower fee. The people that are paying the higher fee, I don't understand the logic of robbing the rich and letting the poor pay for it, or subsidizing the trash company, or subsidizing the people that want better service. So those are just a few things that were mentioned that I just appreciate the opportunity to throw into the mix.
Thank you very much.
Mary Gisinenzo, 695 Camino Roadway. We also do our total recycling, taking it to the dump. I have receipts here since we moved into Napoma in the year 2000, and we use the dump maybe 5 or 6 times out of the year. We completely recycle everything, take everything once a month in paper, garbage, I mean not garbage, but plastic cans, maybe on a monthly basis, the green waste every other month, and it comes out to $12 a month when we do the green waste. I don't see why we should have to have mandatory, you know, pickup, because we take very good care of our yard, living there in a nice neighborhood. Anybody's welcome to come in and inspect the place when they want to, and I don't think it should be mandatory. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, and that's not a weather report either because it's kind of overcast. Anyway, directors, my name is Richard Mobroughton, and I live on 704 Ridge Road in Napoma, and I have 1-plus acres. And due to my wife's work, which is hauling to the dump down here on Santa Maria, about once every 2 weeks with a trailer load, I haven't been able to attend these meetings because she usually goes down on Wednesdays. But anyway, I wish to protest the mandatory garbage waste cycle recycle pickup. I did when I was on the board. I rescinded it because I didn't like mandatory, and I'm still against the mandatory portion of it. And I do not think it will help the stuff deposited along the roads. Most are tires, mattresses, stoves, and so forth, not the everyday household garbage. In any case, green waste. A 96-gallon waste wheeler, we have 6 to 8 32-gallon cans of green waste per week. Much of it is plants, ice plant and fast-growing ground cover and so forth. I weighed some of the ice plant. 5-gallon can full weighs 10 pounds, so 2 pounds per gallon. A 96-gallon waste wheeler is 96 times 2 is 192 pounds. I can't handle that going down a driveway unless I want to get down 100 miles an hour. And I doubt if any of you could, too. And I doubt that you could. If there would be a weight limit, then a smaller, more can should be allowed. The person across the street also has 6 to 8 cans per week, and they have lawn, garden, trees, leaves by the tons. Of course, if you have a gardener who does all your work, like in Black Lake, then why worry? Our 1-plus acre has more natural habitat than the Napomo Gardens. Of course, we keep it neat and do the weeding and trim and prune our trees. Our last bill from the sanitary service was for the $40 for the 2 months for general, plus $28 for the excess green waste containers for 2 months. The cost of extra green waste containers goes up to $3.85 per month per can. It didn't say the size of the can. Again, who can handle a full 96-gallon can? I know the 32-gallon cans cannot be handled automatically, but we customers are not robots either and have to handle the larger cans. So even if you make them pick up mandatory, I hope you'll reconsider the green waste problem. Then recycle. 164-gallon can. The cardboard box is smashed, even driven over with an automobile, flattened, will not fit a 64-gallon can. You are making it very difficult to even recycle properly. You all should drive the rural areas on trash days and see just what the size and amount of recycled cans there are. A lot of these people had a lot of good comments. I'm going to extend this with kind of a different one. All normal people do have much green waste, so no need or space or desire to compost. So I imagine Director Trotter and Eby have gardeners, so their green waste stuff does not occur. Director Verhele probably composts or dumps it on the Napomo Native Gardens as compost. Director Worsing, she probably holds hers to work because she pays twice that way. And Director Wynn, I don't think he has any green waste, but if he does, he probably dumps it on Thompson Road so Patterson Academy can pick it up. Anyway, that's what the science keep telling me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mobroton. Just for your information, no, I don't dump any at the Native Garden. I do compost all green waste. Any other public comment? Then, seeing none, I will bring it back to the board and Mr. Seitz.
Yeah, I just wanted to address just a general comment. Just so everybody knows, in our ordinance, there is an appeal procedure. I just want to read it so that if you have a particular circumstance, it says, when any person by reason of special circumstances believes that the rules and regulations prescribed herein are unjust or inequitable as applied to a particular place of business within the district boundaries, the applicant may make a written application to the general manager stating special circumstances, citing the provisions complained of and requesting suspension or modification of such provision or charge as applied to his or her place and premises. The general manager shall forthwith consult with the collection service provider and cause an investigation of the condition upon which the application is based. If after consultation with the collection service provider, the general manager finds that such provisions or charges are unjust or inequitable as applied to the applicant's place or premises within the specified area, the general manager may suspend or modify the provision or charge complained of as applied to such place or premises, so long as the modification does not materially affect the franchise agreement. And then one of the provision modifications or suspensions are granted on a 12-month basis. So all I want to do is point out that if you have, I'm not going to make a ruling as to whether any of the commenters here would fall into that category, but I just want you, there is an appeal process that is in there that if you have a particular circumstance where you believe that the deal is inequitable, then you do have an administrative remedy.
Yes, please.
Could you come up to the podium and again state your name?
Yeah, Larry Zilke. The first sentence you read refers to a place.
A particular place or business.
Or business.
Okay, thank you. And could you then come up and... Since the meeting's being recorded, I do want...
I'd just like to ask one question. Do you give special rates for senior citizens? Because there's only two of us in the house.
7.01.
You don't create much. So do you ever consider that, giving special rates to senior citizens? Or widows with a house just by themselves? That'd be something to consider.
Okay, rather than get back to public comment and whatnot, you know, we did close it, and I know those were clarifications as to what John was reading, but I would like it to stay in front of the board right now. We've heard comment. Most of it relates to mandatory. Is it right or not right? And I feel that's what's before us at this time, although there do need to be some corrections to the ordinance as written. But Mrs. Worsham.
Thank you. I see on number 43, as I tried to state earlier, that there's three account numbers. Wouldn't that be three votes? I know that's insignificant, but...
I think since I'm unable to clarify to be sure, then we should count it as three votes. We'll err on the conservative. My thought is if they have three accounts, that means they have three meters and they probably own three parcels. And not sure. Then that's fair that each, as a parcel, as a multi-parcel owner, then you have as many votes as you have parcels.
And then, were any of these, did you have, when you sent out the notice, did it say address correction if the people didn't receive their notices, or did we send them with certified mail, or was, you know, like, I get other people's mail, sometimes lives in a different...
That's valid with address.
Thank you, I received one too.
Yeah. Right, they were not sent certified mail.
So then there's actually no guarantee of how many folks really got them. Because I get, looking here today, Mr. Eby got my mail. So, you know, I mean, things can go wrong. And to have a democracy, I just, you know, I'm just opposed to this. And I, most citizens are opposed to this kind of protest situation. Because you know that... We already know that 2,200 people aren't going to protest such a thing, but because most of those people are already customers for garbage pickup anyway, so it's all of, I just don't really believe that Napomo should have to have mandatory trash pickup.
Mr. Eby, you have some questions?
Yeah, my first question is, what specific area is the trash pickup mandatory for? What are the boundaries that we're talking about?
It would be the service district boundaries, parcels less than 2.5 acres. Our current service district boundaries.
So it's the same boundaries as the water and the same boundaries as voting?
That's mm-hmm. correct.
How many counts total? You told us before.
Well,
4211.
4,211 parcels, and that's, as we've heard today, may not have been absolutely complete. There's some parcel owners that maybe did not receive a notice.
Okay, my second question is a clarification. I have some heartburn with the mandatory just because there are the few people that in the special situation that it probably doesn't make any sense for. You mentioned an administrative remedy. Would you elaborate on that? How can somebody opt out of mandatory citizenship?
Well, first of all, a individual customer can't opt out. They can request, they can appeal the procedure, and they can request, for lack of a better word, a variance not to comply. And what the general manager's obligation is to investigate the reasons why, make a determination, and consult with the franchisee to make sure it doesn't materially alter the agreement. And on that basis, he can authorize a variance.
What would be the criteria for allowing?
Well, there is no like articulated criteria because each situation could be different. I mean, if we went through and said it has to be A, B, C, D, E, and then somebody comes up with a M that makes sense to the general manager, then you bound their hands. So it's intended to be written broadly to allow the general manager to exercise their discretion.
That is an awesome responsibility for the manager. I think it's unfair.
Okay, there are, from what I understand, there are around 3,000, 4,000 accounts that are eligible, and 95% of those already take trash, and 5% don't, so that's 150 or so that this applies to, that becomes mandatory, that they are mandatory now. It seems to me that if we make this mandatory, it seems to me people with special, good, arguable cases like Molly Abbott could tell you that they're hauling their stuff to the dump and they require, it's best for them. They could make that request for that variance to you and get opted out of it at your discretion.
That's correct, in coordination with the garbage company. I think what we're looking for here, what that wording requires, is that we don't make it mandatory and thus get the lower rate from the garbage company and apply to the entire community, and then have the general manager turn around and say, well, you know, everyone's got a good reason here, so I'm just going to give everybody a variance and materially affect the contract that we're entering into with the garbage company. So.
Well, in all the protests that you got on the sheet that you gave us, only 10% of the protests were for the mandatory part of it.
Hmm.
All right. And if that's indicative about the number of people here that are protesting the mandatory, it seems to me that the people here who had enough gumption to come in and complain about it to us could also have the same gumption to come in and ask for a variance to you. And if you found that they were worthy of opting out, you could opt them out. And it seems that would solve a lot of the problems that we're having here. I don't know how many of the other people are in that same situation or not.
And I can just ask John, and that's done on a yearly basis? Is that
right? It's a 12-month variance. So it's incumbent upon the person that requested the relief to come back. But I have to tell you, you know, generally speaking, when you would do it, you would have to provide the evidence that you are providing us here today, and that is that you have an alternative method. Like, people have come in with their slips showing that they are taking or addressing their solid waste issues by taking it to the dump. I mean, you don't come in and just say, this is John. This is Michael LeBrun. I'll be Michael. You know, if I was a general manager, I would say that if you want a variance, you have to demonstrate that you are actually taking care of your solid waste. But you just can't come in and say, I want a variance.
Los Osos has the same ordinance language that you're talking about right now. And there are about 12 people that have opted out, and they've actually developed a criteria list that says if you're complying with AB 939, recycling 50% of what you throw away, if you comply with the state of California rules that say trash to trashable waste must be removed every 7 days, if you have a contiguous lot next door to another parcel that's taking it, and then they leave a general catch-all or as determined by the general manager. And Los Osos has about 4,300 people residentially in their district, and there are 12 exemptions, and the district manager sends me a letter and says, please go out and do an investigation, make sure trash isn't accumulating on the property. I send it back and say, no, there's no trash accumulating. And I get a letter from them that says exempt them for a year. And then every year they have to come back to the district and ask for it again and justify it again. But the process, it is working.
And the reason why you do it for a year is because during that year you want to come back with the slips from coal can or wherever they take it so that there's some evidence in the record that the solid waste is actually being...
And I'll just expand on that point a bit. I live out in the rural area of the county and near Black Lake Canyon, which gets quite a bit of publicity for illegal dumping. And I've been directly involved, and I think it's important for folks to know that if they have somebody come by and do hauling for them, require those people, don't pay them until you get the slip from the garbage company, that they went through the gate, because I have been directly involved again with finding people's trash in Black Lake County, Black Lake Canyon, contacting them directly, and they had hired someone to haul their waste off and paid that person good money to do it, and then come to find out that it was dumped in the canyon, and they felt terrible about it. So I think it's just a good opportunity to get everybody to understand that folks will haul waste for you, but if it sounds like too good of a deal to be true, I assume that it probably is.
Okay, Mrs. Worsing, and then we'll need to come to a decision
with
the board.
Thank you. If I live within the district and I have my own well and I don't have a water account, does that mean that I'm exempt from mandatory?
No water.
No water meter.
What?
And,
I'll let Council take
it. I think Mr. Martin probably knows the answer to this. With mandatory, how many accounts will we be adding that's not in the system now?
It looks to me like there's going to be about 318, but there could be some situations like you or a duplicate that we met. Because what we try to do is we try to mesh our billing records against the county tax area records, and sometimes it wasn't exactly a perfect matchup in terms of address. We have it listed on Walnut, and the actual physical address of the county is on some other street corner, so that there's going to be some of those, but in general, 318.
So if this passes today, which I hope it does with regard to our community as a rural community, so if this passes, so then you will send a registered letter to these people saying that you now have to take, your cans will be dropped off to you and you will be billed monthly and you don't have any more choice.
What I'll do is I'll send them a letter and ask them to select which size they would like and also a copy of the ordinance. I believe I'm required to send out a mailing to everybody.
And I would like to have it on the record that I want my name off of that I was specifically against mandatory.
We generally just send it on our letterhead, but I'm sure the votes are recorded on the ordinance.
Who knows?
Well, what is the pleasure of the board? Right now, before us, the ordinance is for bundle service. We have the rate increases and mandatory collection. What is the pleasure of the board?
No,
I think we ought to proceed with a vote.
Well, I think we need to understand if we want to go back and remove mandatory, then in my thought process, that would encompass another rate study to take that under consideration, what the rates would be. And then we go back through the whole public hearing process again, and so sometime maybe early next year we're sitting here again looking to pass the ordinance and a resolution. Mr. Wynn.
I'm going to move that we pass this today. I still support it, and I have supported it consistently throughout. It's true that there are many people out there who are very good at recycling aggressively, who do mulch, who do take care of their own green waste and do a good job. And the reason that I'm able to support it is because we do have an administrative remedy in the ordinance that actually meets the needs of those people. They can come in, they can ask to be exempt. The general manager certainly understands, you know, what such things need to be or not. But I can tell you for a fact, because I have done it now for years, that both South Thompson and Black Lake Canyon receive a lot of trash. Now, it's true. Some of it is big stuff. There are tires. There are old washing machines. There are things like that that would not be picked up, except that even those, twice a year, by the way, our next one is the week of September 12th, even large items like that can be picked up by for the ratepayers. All they do is call in. Now, if they call the week before and say, I've got something really big, they'll charge them $10. But I can't hire a pickup truck to go to the landfill and pay that for $10. So it's still a good deal. And that's twice a year now in the district. So because both people that should be exempt can be exempt, and because this does in fact give superior health and safety to the community, I'm very definitely in support of it, and I will move passage of the ordinance today.
I'm not trying to prejudge the will of the board here, but staff has included two documents. One that we believe is self-evident. There's a resolution that's attached to your packet. That's titled 2005 Protest. And I think if Mr. LeBrun has recalculated the number of protests that we've received are approximately.
Right, and that includes the verbal protest today, correct?
Right.
But it still basically finds that we have not received the 5401.
We have not received a majority protest. Now, having said that, you know, adopting this resolution states that, you know, that's just making a declaration that you haven't received a majority protest. It doesn't really materially impact your ability to adopt or amend the ordinance. I just want to make sure that by adopting the resolution, you aren't precluding yourself from further discussion on the ordinance.
Yeah. Okay, then you're saying that the resolution should be passed first.
Right. That's the declaration we would want to. We conducted the meeting.
I felt there was not a lot of discussion on that. House of Members, and I mean, if you go to the ordinance on page 6, 7.09.010B, the third line in B says requesting payment from the within 45 calendar days. Who is from the? From the.
Okay, excuse me, can you just run that?
Yeah, it's on page 6, 709010B.
Right, that's
the third line.
We talked about this. This is the duty of the franchisee to collect bills before.
Right,
right. Need a word there.
But it says requesting payment from the within 45 days. I think something
from
that
should be the.
And it says Templeton.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet, George.
Sorry.
From the what?
From the property owner.
Property owner. And probably Templeton should be changed.
I agree with that 100%.
Thank you.
But we're talking now about the resolution.
No, the ordinance.
Well, I mean, you said we need to pass the resolution first.
Right. But I just wanted to get these corrections into the ordinance. And of course, Templeton should be Napoma. You know, I hate to say it, but I think this same mistake happened on the prior years, that it must be in your computer and you're unable to correct it.
The one at Templeton keeps saying Napoma, so.
Yeah, right.
I would like to update on the protest, working with the district secretary, board secretary here. We received 7 additional protests here, verbal, and that was working against our list of written protests so that we aren't double counting. So our total number of protests now stands at 64 protests.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. LeBrun. Then we would need to start, if we are going to take action, to start with the resolution.
I move for approval of the resolution. I don't have the number here, but anyway, the resolution here. This actually says Ordinance 2005 Draft.
What's the number?
Oh, we're... No, it's actually 948. Because the resolution in our consent agenda was 947.
Yeah. Okay. 948 then?
Resolution 948. And that would be to adopt the resolution saying that we didn't have over 50% protest.
Yeah.
A motion by Mr. Wynn, a second by Mr. Trotter. Madam Secretary, could you call for the vote, please?
Yes,
ma'am.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Now comes the ordinance. Which would be Ordinance 104. Assuming it's voted upon. With the corrections as noted. What is the pleasure of the board, Ms. Beauty? Mrs. Worsley.
I just, I can see the writing on the wall here. But I before, because I'm voting no, but this board's always wanted people to come and sit in the audience to give us their opinion and their because you're probably reflecting what your neighbors think and what you all have spoken to each other, and they're working and they couldn't come. And so, but it's falling on deaf ears. And these are the people who elected us, and they all know 10 people, and those 10 people know 10 people. So I feel this is a rural community, and mandatory should not be included in ruralness.
Mr. Wynn, you have a comment?
I have a motion to make.
A motion to make.
I move approval of the ordinance.
Then we would need a second. Mr. Trotter, second. Well, folks, this is it. Madam Secretary, could you call for the vote, please?
Yes.
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 No.
No. I would like to take a 10-minute break at this point in time before moving to item number E2. And I want to thank you all for coming out and giving us your input. Appreciate that a lot. I don't know.
What's going to be next?
I have no clue.
don't have black lady. And I mean, there have been some times when across the house, oh, sorry about those. I'm sorry that you feel that way, but I got there.
And I'm so sorry for your thankfulness.
Back and forth. I'll tell you, I think the only requirement is they take your pulse and your temperature and say, ah, we have a warm body. That person is a qualified male.
Our input is they are not still have a
For the most part, it was expunged from the standing committee position. which may not be a good idea. Mr. Trotter.
As I recall, one of the motivations and the reasons for creating this position was as far as looking forward to conservation. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, we don't have a conservation program yet, do we?
No. No, this position, this staff person will be instrumental in...
In creating one?
Yes.
Okay. So, seems to me the criteria for hiring a fellow should be a generic outline of his duties as they might appear in another district and another entity, which is functioned for a period of time.
That's actually exactly what we've done. Staff has drafted a position description, job description, if you will, duties, you know, as our typical job description. And we've cut and paste and stole from other communities or cities which have a water conservation and or solid waste conservation.
So that can be our criteria.
That's our starting point. And what we're asking for right now is again, a subcommittee of the board
to create that.
Well, we've created to work with staff to refine it and to get it to a point that makes more sense before we bring it to the full
and put in a salary range. And I believe the draft of that job description was before the board in one of our agenda packets.
No, we have not brought that to the board yet. Okay. And our thought was to bring it to subcommittee again, work with subcommittee, and then bring it to the board once.
Mrs. Worsham?
Thank you. Would this be called a water conservation compliance specialist or a solid waste?
The title we have, and I use it right in here, is conservation / compliance specialist.
Okay.
So what we're looking...
Like a policeman.
Well, the job description's in there. We're not looking for a lot of policing duties, in fact, but we are looking... The compliance aspect comes... both with our with compliance of our customers with our various ordinances, but also compliance of the district with the various regulatory requirements we have for reporting on the variety of services.
So then this would be total district conservation compliance, solid waste,
yes,
sewer, water.
Our main conservation, our resource conservation focus is water, and then we have our solid waste conservation focus. And then again, the regulatory compliance. And we also, in our job description, we've outlined, we foresee this person helping with our public outreach, working on becoming our webmaster, the person who has the time to keep our website updated. And again, the public outreach aspect, I think, plays in much of conservation. Where we stand right now is where we need the public education aspect of that. Both conservation and compliance. We get out to our public, make them understand.
When are we going to start developing a conservation program?
When we get that person on.
So that's the first step.
Well, I believe that we need more information on the job description before we can even go further with it.
Well, the intent here is we have a draft job description that we could have placed in here, but what we're asking for is the subcommittee of the board to work with staff more closely to further develop that job description before we bring it back to the full board for consideration. So it would be premature for us we're simply asking today for a subcommittee of interested board members who would like to work more on this job description before it comes back.
I think you just need to have more information even before, you know, like maybe I would like to be on that, but first I would need to know what all you're going to cover. I mean, is it going to be full-time? Who does she report?
Things such as will he be required to have a gun permit?
The staff position right now is envisioned and going back to our budget process this year, is a full-time staff position that will be working under the direction of the assistant administrator. And that's how we brought that in a very generalized form, if you will, within our proposed budget package for 2005-2006 and shared that with the directors at that time. And now, again, we're trying to take that to the next step of developing that position before coming back to the full board. And so really, the full description of what we're looking for today is a couple of interested board members to
Let me make a suggestion to simplify things. Oh, yeah, well, originally with Ed, you can speak to it yourself if you prefer.
I just said, this is mostly having to do with conservation. You've got a conservation subcommittee already. Why don't they take it on?
It's the same.
Well, this is personnel. We're setting salaries and those kinds of things. So I think it does warrant a separate committee. And having then a personnel committee, we could address other personnel items too.
The one thing that the personnel committee was set up for in the past was that if an employee had a problem, they're supposed to go to the general manager. If they couldn't somehow work out their problems with the general manager, they came to the personnel subcommittee. And that way it didn't come out in a public meeting for all five directors here. Although in closed session, if it ever came that far, it would then.
Of course.
But now, we actually didn't get a big run of people coming to us. Once we finished our personnel handbook, we pretty well didn't do anything from then on, which is why I think last year we discontinued it.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Wynn, did you have any other further?
That was.
Mr. Eby, anything? Mr. Worsham? Then we would need a motion and a second to establish a personnel subcommittee.
I move that.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Wynn, a second by Mr. Eby. I'll open this to public comment. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. Madam Secretary, could you call for the vote, please?
Yes.
Mr.
Eby?
Yes.
Mr.
Carter?
Yes. Yes. And at this point in time, then, as president, I get to select, or I get to request board members to participate. Mr. Wynn, would you chair this subcommittee?
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Okay, thank you. And I'm going to appoint myself to follow on. I've written a bunch of job descriptions in the aerospace industry. So, yeah. But I'll try to leave out the engineering portion and try and turn around the conservation compliance specialist. You have to leave. It's actually after time you have to leave. Thank you very much for participating this morning. It's been a lively
Your shop's not open?
Few hours.
No.
Oh,
that's good. Yeah, it is.
How's Richard with his tendonitis? Is it getting a lot better? Well, that's strictly a gender thing. Men tend to overdo it. Okay. Then E3 is our special district risk management.
You may want to say something to let the minutes reflect that, Director.
Yes. Let the minutes... thank you, Mr. Wynn. Let the minutes reflect that Mrs. Worsing had to leave at 11:09. Then moving to item 3, our special district risk management authority resolution ballot, which I hope you've all had a chance to go through. This is the election for the SDRA board of directors and includes a resolution, which would be 949, and each of the people wishing to run have put in a statement of qualifications. Any, Mr. LeBrun.
Just briefly, thank you, President Verheilig. At the well, at the time I saw the staff report last, there had been one candidate who submitted additional material beyond the statement that was received with the ballot, and as I understand from staff, we received two additional candidates. So a total of three candidates have also provided supplemental material beyond the candidate's statement of qualifications that was included with the ballot package. So we have provided all that material to the board. I did want to point out again that this is an associated organization that's associated with California Special Districts Association, but it is separate, and that this is Special District Risk Management Authority and SSR Insurance Company. So hopefully directors have had a chance to review the ballot materials and have prepared their votes, if you will. Again, the way this will proceed is that we can vote up to or indicate up to seven candidates on the ballot for voting for up to seven candidates on the ballot, and then the ballot is formally adopted in the form of the resolution.
Thank you.
Did you review these documents?
I have not.
Yeah,
no. I don't have a recommendation. I apologize.
Of course, you can't vote anyway. So.
I can't, but I had
that's okay.
I'm trying to review this and make a recommendation, but I was unable.
I hope everybody has had a chance to go through the.
I did.
But I did too.
With nothing. I mean, there's some good people here.
There are some good people, yeah. But their statements were very weak.
Yeah, right.
Very few really said why they wanted to be on the board. It was an exciting experience. Sorry, that doesn't cut it. I was very disappointed.
Can we do this?
Professionality.
Is there a timetable for this?
I'm afraid there is.
Yeah.
I don't have it with the. Okay. September 16th is. What are we at there? Russian instructions right on this front.
If it's possible, I'd like to defer this to the next meeting so we have time to dwell on it again. Excuse me, let me go a step further. I think we ought to speak to the management of the organization and ask them what they think. Because they have some personal experiences there that we don't have.
I think the other thing that people do is I went to the police last night.
Yeah.
A, they only voted for two, because they felt by voting for two, their vote would count more as opposed to voting out of the seven. That was a lot. But I think you could talk to, have Michael call up and talk to what other special districts in our area are voting for. That's the only thing I would suggest.
Well, like Chris said, the management of the special district.
Yeah, I'm not so hot on that because, you know, I don't know if management's going to respond saying, I like this guy, I like that guy, I like this guy, I like
well,
that guy.
What about Bill Miller? He's the president of the state organization.
Yeah, I think contacting another public representative to the community and to the organization and asking them what they think is one thing, but asking staff.
Well, he's not staff. He's,
no.
He's elected.
I agree. I think he's more appropriate. I just don't like going to staff and asking who do you want to boss me.
Well, you know, when I went through this list, I struck out four, just eliminated, because they didn't seem to be working with water particularly, which is one of our major issues. I don't see putting somebody from a cemetery district in there. I mean, it's too monochromatic. I would like somebody that had a broader range of understanding of these things. I only saw one that I thought gave us more than the others, and that was Mr. Gunner. But Cliff, if you have contacts from
I know Bill Miller very well. He'll level with me. If you want me to speak to him, I'll do that.
Well, to me, that would be more useful. I mean, maybe that's insider trading or something, but at least we're getting more information. Otherwise, it's...
I'll call him. Is that all right?
And Mike, at the very back of your package, that's where the two additional letters came in. Mr. John Woolley, July 29th date, two-sided letter. And then it looks like Ken Thompson, and just a brief statement. That's the other two.
Yeah.
But in reviewing again the for the instructions for the ballot, we do have until September 16th to have the ballot returned. So that would allow us to
take it up at our next meeting. In September, we would meet on the 14th, so that's really cutting it close.
But we'll be back here on the 24th.
The 24th. I in general, what I was looking for in their statement of qualifications was not just, hey, I'm a good finance person. We can keep insurance rates low. Insurance rates are only a portion of risk management.
Mm.
One of the big things is proper training for employees and ensuring that districts are in compliance with Cal OSHA and OSHA, and that the employees receive proper training in handling materials, hazardous materials, regular materials, in their daily work and in doing maintenance and those kinds of things, so they're not overlifting and that our chain swings and hoists are certified such that if a chain breaks and somebody gets injured, at least it was inspected and found to be okay, that we're not hanging ourselves out for liabilities. These items help to keep the rates low. And I found very little, except for just a couple people, that expressed a desire to look beyond the keep the insurance rates low aspect, or even mentioned much of anything as to why they wanted to be on the board.
Mm-hmm.
Finding it as an exciting experience, I hate to say it, that doesn't cut it.
It was pretty silly.
I was rather disappointed in thinking that these people are probably somewhat professionals.
I make a motion that this be deferred with these activities
until
completed before this
until
August 24th meeting.
That's fine.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Motion by Mr. Trotter, second by Mr. Eby. Madam Secretary.
Mr. Trotter?
Yes.
Mr. Eby?
Yes.
Mr. Wynn?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. I don't know, maybe you could express to Mr.
Miller
the lack of professionality in how these people put together their statement of qualifications. I found it rather...
Let's just show by the way we vote.
Thank you. Moving on to item number F, manager's report. Mr. LeBron.
Thank you, President, for highlighting. I apologize. You have a written manager's report in you that you received just today as you walked in the door, so I expect you to be versed in it. I will hit some highlights on the service request. I did not provide an updated allocation spreadsheet, but I have given some numbers here. We actually, since our last update, four existing locks were issued will serve letters administratively. That was August 4th. So that brings our totals, as you can see here, single family residents, we've allocated 49%, and overall allocations at 42%, and that's 42% of our 51 acre feet, and we are at 85% of the water year. under other, I will
question,
be...
Question
yes,
on this?
Yes.
Where do you draw the line between what's administrative and what's not?
Our district ordinance allows administrative for up to any single lot. Let's see, I believe it caps commercial at 1 acre foot. I'd have to look. It's in the code, but then subdivisions up to 4 lots can be handled administratively.
So it's by area of the property?
It's by actual, what I say, it really comes from the amount of allocation. Because it might be 4 lots, well, those could be 4 20-acre lots, but if the subdivision is...
The amount of water that they're expected to
if
use?
If the subdivision of up to 4 can be handled. It also says, though, if there's anything complicated or out of the ordinary about a service request, that even if it falls under those limits, that the encouragement would be to bring it in front of the board. These, again, are 4 existing lots here in the on the west side of, east side of Highway 101, and 50 by 150 lots, 7,500 square foot. Pretty straightforward allocation, I thought. I'll be looking to work with the supplemental, the supplemental water policy, as you'll recall, at our last meeting, we spoke about this, but really left it, I think, dangling a bit. I had some input from the board, but what I'd like to do there is to come back, is to bring that to the Water Resources Subcommittee, or I think maybe that's where it best fits, or possibly the supplemental water, but that's the supplemental water Santa Maria, and I think our supplemental water policy is I think I had board agreement that should be a broad policy that is not tailored for one project or the next, but really where we're going with supplemental water in relationship to our water resources. So what I intend to do here is to work with the Water Resources Subcommittee and bring that, I don't even want to call it a draft policy, but the starting of a policy, work that up to a draft policy and then get that back in front of the full board. In addition, in looking at our annexation policy, I think with our new rate structure and with our plans on supplemental water, our annexation policy is a bit antiquated, and I will be going. Now we've got an annexation subcommittee, but it's a specific area, and
not anymore.
We brought that to a full annexation subcommittee.
No,
you brought it to the
put it into the
Santa Maria supplemental water committee for area 1.
I don't know if we'd have a subcommittee that this applies to then, but I do think we need to look at our annexation policy.
I mean, you say it's antiquated. It's only 2 years old.
I understand, but we talk about fees that are for supplemental water that are $10,000 in these types of things. Yeah, I think you probably worked on that. The reason this comes up is I get calls from folks who have development projects in our sphere of influence, and they want to come and meet with me and talk about their development project, and then I have this annexation policy. It's like, well, this is what it says, but here's how we're really moving toward, and so I'd like that policy to be right up to date, and that really makes my job easier. I don't want people to feel that if they come meet with the general manager, they get the special deal because I talked to them, or it just needs to be very clear. And I look to the board. Maybe what I can do is come back and ask for an annexation subcommittee formation at a subsequent meeting, or if we feel that there's a committee that the subcommittee that we have currently that could handle this.
It was you and Judith last time, Michael? Or Mike?
For which?
For the annexation.
No, that was Eddie.
No, I wasn't here.
No. 2 years ago.
Two years ago.
We did the annexation.
Yeah.
That was you and Judith. So then it'd be wise to put it on the August 24th agenda for the formation of the annexation subcommittee.
I don't know if you need a subcommittee for that. I mean, basically, we have the existing policy. We have language for changes that general manager is going to suggest. Why don't you give us a draft of emendations and take it as a whole board?
I can I can take a run at that.
But he, or, I mean, it's just a, do a red line, you know.
Right.
Send it out to everybody.
Right. I understand, but I just...
Because all we're doing is updating it for factual information.
You make it sound so simple. And I, well, I'd be happy to bring it.
It wasn't that simple. The last time we did it, and Ed actually wasn't serving on the board, but he actually contributed one of the key principles was a distinction between whether you're overlying sufficient water or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that distinction should go away.
No.
How did you look at it, see if it makes sense to just change the numbers?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give that.
That's the only thing in it that I can think of that is different. I mean,
yeah.
All the other conditions are the same.
Okay, well, okay. When we talk about zones of benefit, as I recall. But anyway, I can, okay. I guess, I wonder, is that something I can do some markup and then informally share with the board?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
see how we're
it's
getting, you know, if I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
The point is we're not discussing with each other, but you can send a copy to each person and we can respond back to you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that suggestion.
And there may be some other wording that we may want to put in there
maybe to
sort of make it more longer line than if you put in a number.
I'll pull that up, do a little red line, and get it out to the directors, and we can initiate it at that and see how that goes.
Larry, I don't know if you caught what his comments, but if we used language that was not numerically specific, but more captured a principle, so you don't have to keep revising it when the numbers change.
Understood.
Mm-hmm.
Then.
Yeah, that might help things along.
Yeah. So you just say the cost of, you know, the comparative cost of infrastructure, and whatever that number turns out to be, that's what they'll pay.
Moving on down, just to explain some of what I've written here. Letter mailed to Woodlands. That was a formal letter, and I think I copied the board
mm-hmm.
on that letter, and just that let them know that I didn't say thanks, but no thanks, but I said no thanks. I think
yeah.
What it came down to.
That's basically.
I do have a... We've got a letter ready to go out to our commercial customers on the sewer charges. I think I was looking over that Excel spreadsheet with one of the directors, I think it was Mike, and we saw some things that weren't making sense. I found an error in the calculation, but unfortunately we still have, it dropped the Shell station off the top to number two, but they're still on the order of a pretty substantial increase in sewer rates. And again, those customers that are, I've given some numbers here, 10 customers see 100% or more, a few of them up around 400-500%. This is just on typical bill comparison, not looking at a specific bill they have. But I will be making calls to all those customers in the higher group. We're also looking to see which of those commercial accounts don't have irrigation meters right now, and then we'll encourage them to move to that irrigation meter. They were grandfathered in. The district now requires irrigation meter on commercial accounts, but we had some existing, and so this will really give them, I think, some motivation to move to a commercial, to move to an irrigation meter, which, of course, would be at their cost, but we don't envision charging a capacity charge there because the water use is already being had through the single meter, but they will have a cost incurred by having the meter installed and plumbed.
But in the long run, it would offset the cost of their sewer.
Yes.
Because that water wouldn't be counted.
That's correct.
Towards their sewer.
That's correct. So for those that, the proposed sewer increase is quite substantial, but it's because of irrigation accounts. I can think of one right off the top of my head is Napoma Library. They don't have a separate, Mid-State Bank doesn't have a separate irrigation. So when I look at my spreadsheet, they're looking at pretty hefty sewer rate increases, and I know that those are wrong because those are just, they're not.
The other one that you might just take off the list is the old rec center, which now it's no longer in use, and whatever new use they come up with is going to generate a whole new set of sewer numbers and water numbers.
But as a commercial account, I thought it would make sense.
Are they still paying when there's...
I'll look at the status. If the count, I know our, I don't have the spreadsheet in front of me, and I know we have a note there that
it was in the top 10, though, I remember, down around 9 or 10,
okay,
someplace in there.
Okay, I'll take a look at that as we go forward on that. I will be probably putting that in your mailbox. I can also, I share things electronically readily, and I know that the majority of the directors get it electronically. So you'll see our an example letter, and then the spreadsheet is to what we mail merge with to show you all the commercial accounts that will receive this letter. The CSDA conference, that's coming up that last week in September, 27th through the 29th. I wanted to remind the directors of that. I have all the information in my office. Of course, it's on the CSDA website also, and encourage any directors that might like to attend that. I do intend to be there. Actually, Monday the 26th is a manager's set-aside day where there'll be a few different lectures that I'll be able to attend on the 26th, and then, of course, the 27th.
I have to teach then, unfortunately, so I can't go, but it has been,
it's
been well worthwhile. I would recommend directors going. It's a lot of good information.
I might go. I'm working on it. Are you going to take their wife?
Well, we're from the Long Beach area, so she'll be down there. I don't know if she'll be down with me the entire time, but she's put it on her calendar.
Let me, in my experience,
yes,
wives are a real asset when you go to these conferences. Keep you out of the bar.
You don't know my wife? No.
And it really is an asset.
I know Susie.
I made a note that I want to see it moving along. I'm too ready to
see here.
The Art Commission never followed up from our last meeting. Of course, they weren't here at the last meeting. They haven't followed up with me since. And I just thought I'd let the board know that, and we're not taking any action on that, absent their follow-up.
And did you share with the other board members the California Supreme Court ruling?
No, I don't.
They ruled, the Supreme Court of California ruled that public agencies that put up art cannot discriminate against submissions on the basis of content. And they brought up a number of things that were, by any reasonable standard, would be obscene. And the court ruled that they can't do that. But the minute you open up the door, then it's open.
That changes.
And that was a recent, wasn't it? That was a recent, Mike just called me on that. Did you get that information recently, or
it just came out, it was in the Sacramento Bee last week,
right.
The ruling was in the reporting, and I thought, oh my goodness.
Anyway, I think that may have, I don't know if maybe that's why they're not calling, because that was one of the concerns I expressed from the get-go, but they haven't followed up. I'll keep the board informed on that. We do expect, I'm moving on now to field activity. We do expect to be out to bid again on the Black Lake Lagoon Liner. I've really stripped down that design, if you will, to be a very basic liner installation, minimize the different options, and Mr. Gehring has made a number of pre-calls to contractors, and he assures me that we will get three or four bids on this, and we're hoping they're more favorable, and we can come in within our budget on that. I've been working with Director Trotter quite a bit and the village council out there at Black Lake on the Black Lake salt violations, and we've done some sampling, and we've also found, I've been informed by a representative of the water softening industry, and I don't know, John and I haven't looked into this yet. I know we talked about it just before the meeting, but the water softening industry, at least, they're of the opinion that all ordinances were vacated in 1997. All ordinances that outlaw self-regenerating water softeners, or prohibit self-regenerating water softeners, were in fact vacated by California State Supreme Court action, and then subsequently one assembly bill and one Senate bill were introduced in California that set a fairly high bar for coming forward and enacting an ordinance that prohibits self-regenerating water softener use. In fact, we were looking at that this morning with Cliff, and in fact, those new state laws actually allow grandfathering in, so it wouldn't
wouldn't be very effective for us. But
do we have the numbers of those?
I've got them, not with me, but I'll be sitting down with John on Friday and talking about a number of outstanding issues we have.
Okay.
Michael, it's SB 1006.
Again?
SB 1006.
Okay.
And AB 334.
334.
And those are the new. Of course.
But what's the California Supreme Court ruling?
I've got that in my notes. 97. Okay. But I think in the message that we'll continue to deliver at Black Lake is that there is a state discharge limit on our effluent at Black Lake that is very much in effect, and we exceed that limit, and fines for exceeding that limit can be up to $5,000 a day. And so that is our main focus.
And that would be shared by the entire Black Lake Village?
That's correct. That's correct. It's a discharge limitation at the effluent plant, and there's no way I could assess it to an individual.
Larry, may I ask?
Please.
To make a comment.
Yes, you may, Mr. Trotter.
John is going to look into those two bills, because they may alter our path here substantially. Is that right, John?
You've got to kind of remember one other thing. My recollection, I had my staff pull the file. I haven't looked at it. But I think the specific plan for Black Lake precluded the use of self-regenerating. In other words, it was a condition to a discretionary permit.
That's exactly right. I have a copy.
And it was a specific plan. It wasn't a ordinance. It was a specific plan.
Right. And so I mean, it's good. These cases don't get tried. So, I don't know the rules. My guess is that the specific plan controls any ordinance, because that's where the developer agreed on behalf of all lot owners not to use self-generating water softeners. And my guess is that the reason why they did that is because they knew that the discharge was going to be to the golf course. And of course, you don't want self-regenerating water softeners discharging to a golf course. Now, the regional board may have also chimed in there. I don't know, but
could those both of those bills override that?
No,
they can't be done.
No, not the condition of development. I mean, you know, not able to act in ordinance for a
village planners
to use something as a discretionary condition to a permit to require. Of course, the developer had to agree to it on behalf of all the property.
So that's what we'll be probably falling back to. Yep. We'll take a look at our ordinance, so also to see if it's in the valid.
That would be a problem for a lawyer to argue.
Yeah. I bet you could find a lawyer that would be willing to argue. Mm-hmm. Update on the Southland flow. Continue. We've got some new flow gauges in. We've had since January. I reported last time our flow looked like we're up around 85%, and that expansion was an immediate issue. We've since had the rep from the flow gauge company, I'll say, come out, and we've recalibrated, and this flow, Dan tells me, makes much more sense, about 650,000 gallons a day, about 70% of the design capacity, and that makes more sense with the level of treatment we're seeing out there, where we are meeting our limits for BOD and suspended solids. But we'll be keeping a close eye on that and making sure that we've got the correct flow readings out at our south plant. I will keep the board apprised of that. We do expect to have some, at the very least, some substantial improvements of the headworks out of the plant to help us with our sludge management issues there. We'll probably be planning those. The Hermit Well, I received the follow-up report from Cleveland and Associates just yesterday. I've looked at that. As we expected, the peer review came to the same conclusions, and then Mr. Cleveland has made a final recommendation for abandonment of the well. I've scheduled a meeting with him tomorrow, Friday. I'll ask you to get up and stand with the Bispo, and
I'm hoping, I haven't had a confirmation from Mr. Cleek yet, but it's going to go by, review the entire package, and then be in front of the board for a final decision on this.
Does that mean you abandon it, period, and fill it with cement, or does that mean you
said it correctly?
Isn't there some thought that is a producible well at some other level?
In the very upper screen, upper levels, which we chose not to screen, and we didn't just not screen them, we backed the casing with cement in those areas.
So that precludes using that at a future date.
That's right.
So if you wanted to use that site as a well site for a future date, you'd have to drill another hole.
That's right.
You can't salvage anything.
You did that to protect the surrounding farmers primarily.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And it would be improved to drill. The conditions of presenting themselves would be improved to drill another well in that area anyway.
At a shallower level?
It wouldn't be wise, probably.
Well, it was producing well before.
Actually, it only produced for about a year.
Well, that's only because they chose not to produce for 1 year. They grew one or two crops of hay there, and then they moved.
When they were checking the drill, when they were looking at the drilling log, and they got to about 450 feet, they got a little bit of water, and he said at that time, there isn't enough here to warrant pumping it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, we didn't want to anyway, but that was his comment when we went through that section. So.
Not at that level.
The Santa Maria pipeline, we have, I've issued an open task order. It has a not to exceed limit, and that is Stan and Associates, and that is for the continued support of our pipeline project. And we have a meeting this afternoon where Ernie Ray, senior engineer on the project, along with the head of the mechanical engineering department, Derek Cannon, and I believe one other Cannon staff member will be meeting with myself and the Santa Maria Supplemental Water Subcommittee to talk about our next steps and schedule for moving ahead. At this point, I had a task order drafted to have them help with some of the funding exploration, if you will, and the grants and loans, both state and federal. But it felt like that was starting to expand maybe into an arena where we look for a financial analyst as opposed to an engineering firm. And so we'll be having that discussion with Canada this afternoon as to when is the proper time to bring a financial analyst on. Heard some different opinions on that, depending on how far you are forward with your support work. Anyway, work continues on the Santa Maria pipeline. This is related to that. On the 12th, that's this Friday in the morning, I'll be on the phone with Bob Reed about what I expect to take about a half an hour to sit down with representatives of the Home Builders Association to talk about some of their specific questions as to what type of consideration they might receive in our capacity charges if we worked out a deal whereby they built this pipeline with private funding and in return for capacity based on the pipeline. There are some specific questions there, and I offered to the group to give us a read on the phone for about half an hour.
Now, I understand, is this the issue of what do they do if they buy into the system as opposed to paying the $11,000 per connection fee?
Right. What type of consideration? Because where that whole proposal, the way I see it now is you know, the home builders made this proposal. We came back and said, you know, this is a no-starter unless you can agree to this, you know, public disclosures and these types of things. And we said the builders in their mind thought, well, this is your supplemental water fee is $11,000, so if we build a pipeline, well, we get $11,000 consideration. And we, one of the things we came right back with and said, no, of that supplemental water fee, about $1,200 of that is tied to the construction of that piece of pipe. And that's on the order of what we'd be looking, you know, for consideration. And they just asked, they're basically, you know, so it's back in their court, and they'd like to understand, I think with a little bit more detail, is just where, again, what consideration might be given if
you know, if they're still behind this proposal, and then if eventually it is something that we enter into, that's right.
But again, you're talking about them basically funding the second phase.
Yes. One project, two phases. One pilot, two phases.
What we're confused.
No, so 3,000 feet in this.
They're not talking about the first 3,000 feet. They're talking about water beyond it.
Right. What's been offered is that we're talking about a 6,300 acre foot project right now as far as that length of pipe that we're talking about running between the Santa Maria system and our system. And what the Home Builders Association's proposal was to come in and build the entire pipe with the capacity that we dictate to our standards and specs, and then at the time of completion of that project, the district would be on the hook to pay for its prorated share of that pipeline project, and then the home builders would have on reserve the rest of the capacity of the remaining pipeline. But to look at, I mean, it's one pipe for that capacity. Really, as far as assigning capacity and responsibility and for cost relative to that capacity, that would happen before the project started. Where one of the things we talked about was right now the purveyors have 3,000 acre feet of water envisioned in an MOU. The first option for any additional capacity in that pipeline would be to the purveyors.
And have the other purveyors agreed to pay their share?
No. So we have some people who are willing to pay a share, and we have some people that haven't stepped up. I checked the Santa Clara court.
Still haven't.
But I don't see South Cities or Woodlands, but I didn't drill down into each of the postings. There are about 20 postings now, but I don't see South Cities or Woodlands. You know, Mr. Martin tells us he does expect to see their signatures by August 27th, and I think through that mechanism we'll be agreeing to pay for their share. Then the next question comes in, when will they pay for their share? And they throw out that PUC thing at us, and tell us they have to get up front of the PUC and get all that approved. And so, as you all know, our rate study is based on a $6 million project. With 3,000 acre feet and seeing 79 or 80 new connections a year at $11,000 a connection to work in our rate schedule.
But you remember the rate study that we made and the budget that we set up there envisioned $2 million coming up front.
I do.
From the other purveyors. And without that, it's not a viable, the first 3,000 isn't funded.
Well, and then you go to a 6,300 acre foot project, and does it double the cost of the pipeline? No, I don't think it does.
No.
But if the pipeline costs $6 million, we don't know. So there are numerous variables, and I think it is behooves us to, of course, try to eliminate those variables as early in the process as possible, and also encourage things that the variables that we know would work to reduce costs, because we know costs will go up.
I just know that when builders approach me, and I usually tell you about those conversations, one of the things I'm saying very consistently is we don't have any idea until after the 27th this month, because we don't know who's going to sign the settlement and who's not going to sign.
Right.
Until we
and
know that.
It does not mean that we may not have a project if we don't have those partners.
Yeah.
And in which case, I think we've got some very difficult decisions to make, because we've got hundreds of acre feet of outstanding commitments sitting on the shelf in there that we've made over the years here with the thought of supplemental water coming to this community.
Yeah.
And we've also got a court order that says that, you know, we're on a right to be pumping out here.
Sure.
So anyway, we're all very familiar with these issues. We have received a draft a design review of our Black Lake Water System and Pumping Plant, and staff is reviewing that at this time. We'll go over that. Boyle Engineering has looked at that. They found some significant deficiencies in our pumping plant that I think they knew existed and will need to address. Urban Water Management Plan, I am happy to say that we've fully responded to SAIC's request for information from the district, and that took me much longer than I thought it would, but they have that information now, and what's going on at this point is I'm attempting to schedule a meeting with county planning staff, and Mr. Hand's absence, it seems like everyone wants to throw that football around, but I think I'll be giving a back to call this afternoon, or probably this week, I don't know, probably this afternoon, but, and get some encouragement there to a group of staff that we can meet with. I believe I shared with the directors that the Mary Clement, our consultant with SAIC, in doing a CEQA search online, my gosh, what's going on out there? And, you know, you've got a lot of activity, EIR CEQA activity going on for development in the fall. I don't think any of us are surprised by that, but I've drafted a letter, and John and I will talk about it, on Nacoma Oaks specifically, where our basic test we need to get to the county is, it almost feels as if we're trying to get everything in the pipeline that we hear that the Board of Supervisors talk about all the time, get them all lined up in the pipeline and say, yes, supplemental water is required, but let's exempt what's in the pipeline here as far as projects that are commencing. I know, for instance, on Willow Road, just before Highway 1, there's a drill rig sitting next to it, and they're actively drilling, and there's a project down there, 20 or 40 acres going into 5-acre home sites. I've also witnessed, this is on my commute, I've witnessed another well drilled right out in that area here recently. So
that rig is within 50 feet of that road. Undoubtedly, when they got a permit, the widening of the road was an issue. Wouldn't it have been? You know?
Right, in the proximity of the road. I don't know that Willow Road is being planned to widen. I know it's planned to go through the extension.
It was widening too.
Yeah,
it's part of the woodlands.
Well, you see another development happening there along Willow Road where they've done a substantial retaining wall. I can tell that's going to widen also. So, I would assume, but I mean, honestly, these are things that I struggle to keep up on with the numbers. You would not believe the number of referrals, just development referrals that I just come across from the county, you know, with respond to this within 5 days if you have any comment. You know, so by the time I get to glance at it again, 7 days have gone by, and so I just reported on that. I don't know what.
You know, when you say things like that, to me it sounds like we're actually in need of staff help in that area more so than in the conservation area. If you think about the workload.
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that.
In addressing these planning issues, and again, I think that's a difficulty there because it's coordination that we can do. We can talk about water planning.
But remember, urban water management plan now it makes us a water planning agency. And the county is supposed to accept our results, not us be dictated by them. I mean, there's an adversarial relationship here that may be healthy, but it certainly, we can't cozy up to them and take their numbers too freely. They simply are working a different side of the street, and it's not in our interest, at least as perceived by the residents of Nipomo.
But on the other hand, Michael, I don't know how confident we are in our numbers.
No, I understand that, and believe me, we all, when we passed the last one, we knew that it had plenty of flaws, but I'm happy that it's getting updated.
And I know many residents in Nipomo, and we hear this in the United States, do not want to see Nipomo develop. But again, our issues, even as a planner, they're water resource issues. And so we can't say, well, we just don't like it. You know what I mean?
No, I understand.
To water planning. And so again, as a water district, as we've talked about, the need to go out and obtain supplemental water, diversify our water supply resources, those types of things, we need to do that as a community. And then where we can minimize the cost to our current customers by working with development that is being approved in order to reach those objectives. That's a very fine line to walk. And
But there are people in the community that are simply disappointed that there is going to be development in this community.
Yeah.
And removing a constraint to that development, which is certainly water resources, a double-edged sword. We remove that constraint to help ourselves and our current customers. It also removes that constraint to the future
development. Shirley Bianchi called me the other evening talking about this and saying, you know, so she said growth is coming, but she really wished that she didn't have any growth. She really, in heart, is a no-growther.
Right.
And I said, that's fine. And I said, and my daughter wants a unicorn for her birthday lesson. Birthday present.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this. There are no attachments to this. I apologize. That was left over from the previous.
Okay.
As was my other there under the telemetry system, although I have regular conversations with Mr. Anderson, and that project's not complete. And the latest schedule he's conveyed to me is for a mid-September completion date. And I'm talking to council as to what we might be able to do under the contract. But it's we're in a difficult place where he's made a number of improvements, and I think abandoning his contract at this point we're in that position of trying to analyze, does that represent a big step backward to recover from, and are we simply just another month away from this?
How confident are you in September?
We haven't hit a date yet.
No.
Although we have seen...
Do you have any milestones where you can see progress?
I do. There are, at this point, six of our sites that are up on remote monitoring telemetry system. That's our two major water storage sites, the standpipe and what we call our quads, and then a couple of our supply wells out at Eureka and Black. So I have seen some progress, but it's disappointing.
Thank you, Mr. LeBrun. I'd like to move us along here, so let's go to committee reports. Item number G, any committee reports? Okay, the director's comments, Mr. Trotter.
I can only comment, as Michael alluded to, there's a great deal of activity at Black Lake concerning the effluent. And the meeting yesterday, a very contentious meeting yesterday afternoon at Black Lake, about 10 people, and this same issue was discussed. And I've been asked to do some research, and then I in turn asked John to do some research as it relates to some the bills we mentioned. That's the only thing I have.
Mr. Eby, director's comments?
I went to the Santa Maria City Council meeting the other night to hear about the
sale of water.
Stipulation. And one thing I heard that I hadn't heard until then was that it's not August 27th. It's September 2nd is the new day.
I
just heard that they announced that at the meeting the other night. And the reason I went to the meeting was to hear if there was any objection from the audience to them selling us water.
Hmm.
And there were objections, but not to that. The main objection I heard was to Santa Maria being the water selling business to other people. There was some concern about that. But there was no objection to selling, I didn't hear any objection to them selling to the Pullman. And I expected to. That's why I went. But not a piece.
There was an article in today's Santa Maria Times of a gentleman who's a past council member.
Yoshi.
Yeah.
And he was the one who said that. He was concerned that should we be in the water selling business.
Right.
And the other thing they said, which is kind of interesting, they said they've got enough water to supply a city of 200,000 people. And right now they're at about 70 or 80,000. So that's how much
right, water. Right, Mr. Chisholm speaking, I'm sure. What he outlines is that Santa Maria overcommitted for state water, and then they've also achieved some gains in their groundwater resources and spiritual resources. And so they have.
So anyhow, that was my visit to Santa Maria. They have a much nicer meeting room than we do, too.
The other thing was
I like ours better.
The other thing was the this issue keeps popping up about NCFD taking over park powers. And I've been against it in the interim because I think we've got our hands full with supplemental water, and we don't need to add that other task to it. So until we get supplemental water under our belt, I don't think we ought to be messing with the park. But an idea has come up, and that is to do something like Cambria does, where they have sort of an unofficial group of commissioners, park commissioners, that are appointed by the CSD members. Each member appoints one person, and that group goes off and does park things. And what has been suggested is that we sort of authorize some group like that under our choosing, that each one of the members would choose a park commissioner who lives in the district. And then that group works with the MCAC or the other groups in the community that are concerned about this. And in getting that quasi-official status and they actually do things like get grants for parks and so forth, that it gives the NCSD a gradual acquaintance with park business. And that group, by the way, would report back to the NCSD and the MCAC to tell how they're doing, what they're doing. It would give us some experience without having the commitment of taking on the park powers, and then maybe in 2 to 4 years we'd be in a better position to take over the park. So I've been asked by some people to float that by the NCFD and see what people think about that, about the NCFD having no more of a responsibility than each NCFD board member appoint a commissioner to be on this park commission. See what you think about that. So I'd like, if not at this meeting, at next meeting, take a straw vote and see who's interested in doing something like that. Sort of gets us into the park business without all the obligations.
What would the function of
the commission be? Well, they do something, and I'm not totally clear on it. We could get somebody to come and talk to us about it. But they do something up in Cambria where it allows, this group is allowed to go out and get money for pocket parks. And they're doing that right now. Do you know about it?
Well, I'm not aware of it. I think there's a distinction, though. First of all, I think we can appoint an ad hoc committee to do exactly what we're doing. But the issue is, I think Cambria has parks powers. We don't.
Right.
Okay,
and they do.
So, the idea of them delivering money to us, they get a grant, and us doing something with it, may be a little difficult to achieve under our current structure. The idea of us appointing a parks committee just at no charge, we're not spending public funds, our water rate, our sewer rate, and everybody else's rate. Just as a volunteer committee to seek grants to get to somebody else, that's a problem. But just to remember, we may be a problem with us being the receiver of the money because we don't have, as it stands right now, we have no parks powers.
But you're saying that what Cambria has is the CSD does have park powers?
I think they do.
Probably want to agendize if we're going to discuss it.
Because Mr. Trotter does need to depart shortly.
Anything
else, Mr. Wynn?
Okay. Number of things. The tomorrow afternoon from 1 to 3, our RRM is going to be giving a presentation here to members of the NCAC, Old Town Napomo Association, and Chamber of Commerce. about Crystal Oaks and what they had in mind. These groups are looking at it, I can't speak for the NCAC, but the Old Town and Chamber are looking at it from a business perspective, what impact will it have on the business corridor on Cass and so forth. It's not water, they're not looking at water and sewer particularly, but anyway, it is open to the public and certainly anybody's welcome to attend. This Saturday, the Napomo Creekside Preserve has its grand opening, and I think everybody got a handout on that, so I won't go any further just to remind you from 11 to 3, but mostly starts around 12, mm-hmm. I was told. The Old Town Wine and Flower Festival, which was scheduled for this Sunday, has been postponed until November 6th, if you were planning on going
there. They couldn't get any winery support.
It's bad time of the year, and the coordination fell through on that. And anyway, I think, and it may change locations as well. We'll see. But anyway, it's November 6th is the Sunday for that. I did ask last time, and so I'm going to ask again, because we didn't get it agendized this time, to please agendize an item for us to discuss setting aside $15,000 from our franchise fee to help in the cleanup on September 17th. Now, everybody's got a copy of this. It went out with our bills, which I think they did a good job this time, by the way. It's very clear.
Yeah. Very obvious.
But the Saturday after that, the 17th, the county is willing to bring in a car crusher. It'll be here on this empty lot. We're lining up dump trucks and others to bring stuff in to have it crushed. But we would like to set aside some money so that we can have a little bigger hazmat operation that day, so we can get some high school students and other volunteers to clean up the creeks in here. Tom Martin said he would bring in roll-off dumpsters free for tires that day, and he has a guy that'll take the tires at no cost. So we get some of the old tires out of the circulation. So in short, there's a lot of the pieces that have come together, but we do need some money. We do have this on our budget. It's a $25,000 budget item, line item. And I'm coordinating it as a volunteer from the chamber with the county.
It's a chamber? Affair.
Well, it's a community affair, but yeah, we're doing it with it's not NCSD, but I'm doing it with code enforcement, Murray Cohen, from the county. So,
and I apologize.
It's okay.
I can check my notes. And
it's okay, but
it will be on the agenda next time.
We do. I mean, if assuming that everybody agrees, we have the money set aside for it, and I think we can do it. A couple of matters. You all got the Parks and Recreation thing, so you know that they've stopped their public hearings for the moment. Mm-hmm. Be a few months, 2-3 months, it'll go to the Board of Suits. This is related to the issue that Ed's talking about, though, because there's about $3 million that's unaccounted for in their current way of doing business that needs to be corrected in this recreation parks element, so that it gets spent where the development's taken. Now, there's some lawsuits going now, which we're not parties to, but nonetheless, we have a stake in this, potentially, and we need to pay attention, I think. A couple of other things that are coming up quickly that we have a stake in. As you know, Halcyon, the road up the hill, the steep part is being widened, and that comes out of traffic impact fees for Area 2. But now they're doing the same thing they did 3 years ago. Area 2 is that area over there. They're talking about taking our money and building the overpass into Halcyon and that traffic exchange. And they did the same thing last time.
At El Campo?
No. Where Halcyon crosses Highway 1 into Halcyon Road, goes into Halcyon, the community.
Right.
Now, that's Arroyo Grande. That's outside of our traffic impact area. And they dummied up a fraudulent traffic study, and I'm stipulating that it's fraudulent because they measured no traffic from Oceano. They measured no traffic coming from AG up to play golf and go back. They only measured traffic one way, and they didn't ask where they came from. And based on that, they say, well, you know, we're causing the traffic on Halcyon Road. In fact, since we discontinued sending students to Red Grande High School, we have less traffic going over that road than we ever had before. And yet they're planning on taking that money. That's money that's needed here in Napomo for roads and such. The steep hill clearly is within our area, but going over into Halcyon is not. And they paid the entire road widening in Halcyon last time with Class 2, and they just claimed they had a nexus. And it's not legitimate. Back 4 years ago when they did this, we didn't sue as quickly, but I will definitely, it can't be the NCSD, but we have a great deal to lose at this if it keeps going on. They're doing it for one reason only. There's a lot of development here. It means the pot of money's big. They're taking the money where they find it.
Yes, they did it last time.
Moving further, Oak Glen Mutual Water Company, if you've been looking at who signs and who doesn't sign for the stipulation, one of the parties, a late party to the groundwater litigation is Oak Park Mutual Water Company, and that's Carl Holloway and Jesse Hill. And they've gone to the PUC, and I'm told, again, I don't have a copy of the application, I'm told that they said that we refused them water in the application. If you guys remember, and you were here in the audience, I know, they said they didn't want water from us. We need to stay on top of this, and I think it's important. Anyway, that's the end of my comments.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Wynn. I'll make mine very brief. The West Tef Corridor design plan will hold public hearing this evening here at the district today at 7 o'clock. U.S. Forest Service is having open house with regards to Los Padres National Forest. In Santa Maria, it'll be on August 23rd from 5 to 8 p.m. at their facilities at 1616 North Carlotti, which is just up from Main Street, east of the freeway, Santa Maria. And the Napomo Creek Watershed Steering Committee meets the 18th of August at 6 p.m. at the Senior Center, and we'll be going over the draft watershed management plan. And that's all I have. So moving to closed session.
I just think we just have a couple things.
I like this, it works better.
To go over it, and these are Office of the Government Code, Section 5956.9. This will be the existing litigation. One is the groundwater adjudication, the other one is the Napomo Community Services.